You know, I can't tell you for sure whether Trump flags at RV parks are a leading indicator of declining support in Trump. Trump still has about 60% support among the Republican primary electorate. I hope that it is the case that declining Trump flags on pickup trucks and RVs is a sign that the fever is breaking. We can only wait and see. info@davidpakman.com if you have something to say. We will see you on the bonus show. Remember, you can sign up and get instant access to the bonus show.
A David Pakman membership costs $6 a month.
Six or only three if you use the coupon code FFOX. Sign up at joinpakman.com. I really hope to see you on the bonus show. Donald Trump is suddenly scaring many people. He said on the Clay and Buck show, I know, that he will consider potentially Tucker Carlson for his vice presidential running mate. That's not even necessarily the craziest thing Trump said during the interview. Take a listen to this.
Would you consider Tucker Carlson on your VP list?
Oh, wow.
I want to give you a hypothetical here. You're a big sports fan. You know, like, Nick Saban's going to retire at some point. And if you talk to the athletic director at Alabama, he would say he has a list. So would Tucker Carlson be on your list of potential VPs? And how many names might be on that list as you sit and look and survey the political field?
Well, first of all, you know, I did my first, you could call it counter-programming, but I won't call it that. But Tucker wanted to do an interview during the first debate. And I think you know, because this is what your business is, we broke every record.
Monster audience.
In history. Yeah. I think it just hit over 300 million people.
Now, remember, that is obviously untrue. And we've talked about how Twitter has juiced their system of tracking to make it so Trump can say that. But of course, it's not true that 300 million people watched his debate with Tucker Carlson. It's patently absurd.
But it was for that evening over 207 million. It then got to 275 within a day or two. And the biggest ever was Oprah's interview with Michael Jackson, which was 125 million.
Right.
So we almost doubled it. Now, who would have thought that was going to happen? The debate, the last debate they had, had the lowest audience in the history of presidential debates.
That's true.
I don't know if you know it. And I think the one tonight is not, it's on tonight, and
yeah.
I don't even talk about it.
Would you consider Tucker, though, that they based on the
I numbers? Like Tucker a lot. I guess I would. I think I'd say I would, because he's got great common sense. You know, when they say that you guys are conservative or I'm conservative, it's not that we're conservative. We have common sense. We want to have safe borders. We want to have a wall because walls work. You know what, Ron, I used to say about walls? I'd say wheels and walls. Everything changes.
All right. So then Trump goes off and ranting into other things. But he says he would consider Tucker Carlson. Now, what's fascinating about this is that Tucker Carlson was revealed to have said horrible things about Donald Trump. He referred to Trump as a demonic force. He said he despised him passionately. And now I guess everyone pretends like that didn't happen. And Tucker's interviewing Trump and they're doing the whole dog and pony show of normalization and everything else that we saw. It's very strange, but also it's extraordinarily horrifying that Trump says, yeah, I would consider Tucker Carlson for VP. Now, Trump was also asked about his indictments. And it's actually sort of interesting what he says. Let me play this for you.
I was always of the opinion that a thing like this couldn't happen. In other words, you protect your former presidents. It's, it's terrible thing to go after a former president, other than if you're in a banana republic.
And a possible future
thing.
President as well.
And
which
a possible,
to,
yeah, it's possible.
Do you think they would put you in jail, and do you think that would benefit you?
I don't want to say about benefit because I don't want to predict that, but would they, if they could? I think they would do it. Yeah, I think it's not beyond them. I think these are very deranged and angry people.
So Trump says, you're supposed to protect your former presidents. You're supposed to protect the former presidents, not go after them. Trump is saying he should be immune from consequences if he does illegal things. That's what he's saying. He's not arguing the facts. He's simply saying, I thought you protected your former presidents. He wants carte blanche. He wants license to commit crimes, to shoot the proverbial or real person on Fifth Avenue, as he has said before, and to have no consequences. The entire point of establishing and upholding a rule of law is to apply it to everyone.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The situation in Shifa Hospital now are very critical. Nothing happened like this before. There is direct targeting of the hospital buildings. So our colleagues there, they barely communicate with the outside community.
Gaza's two largest hospitals are no longer functioning. As hospitals, as they run out of fuel and are surrounded by Israeli forces. Doctors at Al-Shifa Hospital are desperately trying to keep alive over 30 premature babies after six babies die due to the power outage. We'll speak to a pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid organization Médecins Sans Frontières. That's Doctors Without Borders. Then we remember the Palestinian doctor Hamam Alow, who was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his wife's home, killing him, his father, his brother-in-law, and his father-in-law. The doctor spoke to Democracy Now 2 weeks ago about why he continued to risk his life to help patients in Gaza.
You think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life and not my patients?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's two largest hospitals, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds, have closed as Gaza's health system collapses under relentless Israeli bombardment and blockades. At least six premature babies and nine other patients have died at Al-Shifa due to the shortages of electricity. Photos show premature babies removed from their incubators, placed together on a bed for warmth as the last remaining hospital workers are forced to resort to desperate measures. Medical staff say Israeli forces have entered hospitals and fired at patients and forced hundreds of others onto the streets. Doctors and officials with the Palestinian Ministry of Health pleaded with international actors to allow for the safe evacuation and treatment of patients. Dr. Mohammed Kandil directs the emergency department at Al-Shifa.
Hospital under fires. The last example is Shifa Hospital ICU. There is another private obstetric hospital was targeted directly today. And two of our colleagues who are specialists in obstetric and gynecology were killed tonight. There is no service for pediatric patients in the northern area. Five kids in the pediatric ICU left alone in Rantisi Hospital, and we don't know what's going on with them. The communication were lost, so they might be dead or alive. So now in Shifa Hospital, they cannot deal with the dead bodies. There is a tenth of dead bodies back in the hospital.
Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed since October 7th. Among the dead is Al-Shifa's Dr. Hamam Alow, whose family home was shelled by Israel. We spoke to Dr. Alow less than 2 weeks ago. Later in the broadcast, we'll play that whole interview. In Geneva, UN staff observed a minute of silence today in memory of the 101 employees of the UN's Palestinian Refugee Agency, known as UNRWA, who've been killed in Israel's assault on Gaza. Palestinian health officials say it's impossible to determine an updated death toll due to communications outages, but said on Sunday at least 11,100 people have been killed since the start of the conflict, including 8,000 children and women. On Friday, Israel's foreign ministry lowered its official death toll from Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel to 1,200 people, down from 1,400. Mass displacement continues as Gazans continue to flee southwards, despite Israeli attacks also targeting southern cities like Khan Yunis, where another 13 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike. This is a displaced Palestinian.
Nowhere is safe in Gaza. My son was injured and there was not a single hospital I could take him to so he could get stitches. There is no water. There isn't enough salt water we can wash our hands with. There is no water for ablution. There are bodies filling Gaza's streets. And there are still people there hoping that it will be solved soon. But only God knows if it will be solved, if they will live, or if they will die. We were forced to leave. It wasn't up to us. The whole world has let us down. The progressive world that boasts about human rights has let us down.
The White House says it's in active consultations with Israel's military over fighting in and around hospitals. On Friday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said far too many Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, but the U.S. has yet to call for a ceasefire or reconsider any of its unconditional military aid to Israel. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, called on Israel to stop killing women, babies, and elderly people in Gaza, and for the first time since the assault started, called for a ceasefire.
I think this is the only solution we have, this ceasefire, because it's impossible to explain. We want to fight against terrorism by killing innocent people.
President Macron said he hoped other countries, including the U.S. and the U.K., would join in the call for a ceasefire. France last month banned Palestinian solidarity protests. In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak fired hard-right Home Secretary Suella Braverman after she called protests for Palestinian rights hate marches and published an op-ed last week accusing London police force of using double standards in dealing with protesters against the war. Braverman was accused of fomenting right-wing hatred. In a surprising move, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has brought back former Prime Minister David Cameron to act as Foreign Secretary amidst a wider cabinet reshuffle. Mary Lou McDonald, the head of Sinn Féin, is calling on Irish and European leaders to take action against Israel's assault on Gaza.
Where is the protection of international law for every child killed in Gaza, for every Gazan mother holding the cold body of their dead child? Israel cannot be allowed to commit atrocities with impunity. The government says that Israel's actions cannot be without consequences. I agree. That is why the Irish government must take the lead and refer Israel to the International Criminal Court and send the Israeli ambassador home.
Mary Lou McDonald spoke at Sinn Féin's annual conference where Palestinian ambassador to Ireland, Dr. Jilan Waba Abdelmajid, also spoke and was met with a standing ovation. Meanwhile, massive demonstrations continue to fill streets around the world demanding a ceasefire and an end to Israel's siege on Gaza. Up to 300,000 people marched in London over the weekend. Around 80 were arrested. Protests also continued here in the United States, including a series of family-centered protests. Children accompanied family members to march to the homes of President Biden in Delaware and New York Senator Chuck Schumer here in New York. Israel's military says 7 soldiers and 10 other people were injured Sunday in a rocket attack by Hezbollah fighters from southern Lebanon. It was the worst cross-border violence between Israel and Lebanon since an Israeli airstrike a week prior killed a Lebanese woman and 3 children. On Sunday, Israel's Minister of Defense, Yoav Gallant, warned Hezbollah against further attacks on Israel, adding, quote, what we are doing in Gaza, we can do in Beirut, unquote. The Pentagon says U.S. warplanes have carried out two more airstrikes in Syria in response to dozens of drone and missile attacks on bases housing Pentagon forces in Syria and Iraq that have injured at least 56 military personnel. Reuters reports one of the U.S. strikes targeted a camp run by pro-Iranian armed groups in Deir al-Zor province. Another struck near a bridge close to the city of Mayadin, close to the Iraqi border. It's at least the third round of U.S. airstrikes in Syria in just over 2 weeks. In Sudan, human rights groups say members of the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group carried out a massacre of around 1,300 Masalit people over 3 days earlier this month in Sudan's West Darfur region. About 2,000 people were injured in the attacks, and at least 300 others remain missing. Survivors of the massacre say RSF fighters went from house to house looking for men, killing each one they found. On Friday, the United Nations warned more than 6 million people have fled their homes in Sudan since fighting between rival military factions erupted in April. About 25 million people, or more than half Sudan's population, is reliant on aid. This is the UN's humanitarian coordinator for Sudan.
Running out of words to describe the horror of what is happening in Sudan. We continue to receive unrelenting and appalling reports of sexual and gender-based violence, enforced disappearance, arbitrary detentions, and grave violations of human and children's rights. What is happening is verging on pure evil.
In Spain, major protests rocked Madrid and other cities over the weekend after acting Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez agreed to grant amnesty to leaders of the Catalan separatist group Junts in exchange for their support to form a new government, which would secure another term for Sanchez as Spain's leader. Carles Puigdemont, head of Junts, has been exiled in Brussels since he and others were convicted over Catalonia's attempt to secede from Spain in 2017. The proposed amnesty deal would allow separatist leaders to run for office. Sanchez's conservative opponents have slammed the deal and urged their supporters to take to the streets. Sanchez and his Socialist Workers' Party formed a coalition with the leftist Sumar Alliance last month and made a series of progressive pledges. Australia has signed an agreement with Tuvalu, allowing citizens of the low-lying Pacific Island nation to take up residency in Australia should rising sea levels force them to abandon their homes. About 11,000 residents of Tuvalu are among the world's most vulnerable to the effects of the climate crisis. In return for offering them residency, Australia will have effective veto power over Tuvalu's security arrangements with any other country. Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong acknowledged the deal was aimed at countering China's influence in the Asia Pacific.
We recognise we live in a more contested region, and we have to work harder to be a partner of choice. We know that. And unlike the previous government, we have been doing the work and we will do the work to work with the Pacific Island Forum members to assure Australia's presence as a member of the family and as a partner of choice.
FBI agents seized the electronic devices from New York City Mayor Eric Adams last week as part of an investigation into whether his 2021 campaign received illegal donations from Turkey. Adams' two cell phones and iPad were returned days later. The seizure came in the wake of a federal raid on the home of Adams' chief campaign fundraiser. The alleged donation scheme is believed to involve foreign businesses who use Turkish-American citizens as straw donors to funnel money into Eric Adams' mayor campaign. Federal investigators are also said to be looking into whether Adams, shortly before he was elected mayor, pressured the New York Fire Department into approving occupancy of a new Turkish consulate in Manhattan despite safety concerns with the high-rise building. Adams reportedly pushed to open the building in time for a planned visit by the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to New York to attend the 2021 UN General Assembly. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott announced he's dropping out of the 2024 presidential race. Scott, the only Black Republican U.S. senator, did not immediately endorse another candidate. Just 2 months out from the first nominating contest in Iowa, Donald Trump remains the Republican Party's clear frontrunner, despite his myriad legal troubles. And in California, a jury has found the animal rights activist and attorney Wayne Chung guilty of three charges, including felony conspiracy to trespass, after he led direct action protests in 2018 and 19 that rescued ducks and chickens from factory farms in Sonoma County. Chung faces up to 3.5 years at a sentencing hearing scheduled for November 30th. He spoke to Democracy Now! After his arrest in 2019.
If you or I tortured an individual dog, we would clearly be subject to the criminal laws of the state of California. Yet when a factory farm does this on massive scale, on a scale a million times larger than an individual person abusing a single animal, it's seen as industry standard and therefore completely immune from prosecution.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we speak to a pediatric intensive care physician with Doctors Without Borders about how Gaza's two largest hospitals are no longer functioning. Back in a minute.
Child will know what you haven't told. His present will be past. He'll ride the time to another state of mind. That won't last, 'cause he'll grow and die, and they would set him free. At I shouted, these children are I. The child will grow and fall and crawl until he would not feel upon them purple gods and these 10 almost years. I let I set the fire on those kitchen's walls, yet I shouted, these children are my fault. Yet I whispered, these children aren't my fault.
The Children Are I by Nasha Rojas. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's two largest hospitals, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds, have stopped functioning as Gaza's health system collapses under relentless Israeli bombardment and blockades. On Saturday, Al-Shifa Hospital ran out of fuel, forcing doctors to remove dozens of premature babies from incubators. 6 preemies have already died. Doctors are struggling to keep more than 30 other babies alive. Palestinian health officials have accused Israel of using snipers to shoot at people inside the hospital complex where thousands of displaced Palestinians have sought refuge. Israel's claimed Hamas runs a command center below the hospital. Hamas and medical officials at the hospital have denied the claim. On Sunday, Dr. Mohammed Obaid, a surgeon with Doctors Without Borders, described the dire situation inside the hospital.
The situation now is very bad. We don't have connection. There is no internet. Sometimes we have some bodies on the call phone. We're on the fourth floor. And also there's a sniper who attacked 4 patients from the inside the hospital. One of them has the gunshot directly in his neck, and he has a quadriplegia. And the other one, he has a gunshot in the abdomen. Some of the people which actually go outside the hospital, they want to go to the south, they bump them also. They bump the family from the Shifa hospital today in the morning. There is no electricity, actually. There is no water. There is no food. So our team is exhausted. We have 2 unit patients die, actually, because the incubator, it's not working because there is no electricity. Also, we have adult patient in the ICU. He died because the ventilator is shut down because there is no electricity. We can see, actually, the smoking, the smoke around the hospital. They hit everything around the hospital, and they hit the hospital many times.
That was Dr. Mohammed Obaid, a surgeon with MSF, Doctors Without Borders, inside the Al-Shifa Hospital. On Sunday, Democracy Now! Reached another doctor in Gaza City, Dr. Fadel Naim.
We are at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, the Baptist Hospital, are the only functioning hospital in the Gaza City. All the injured people and other people with hypertension or diabetes mellitus or diarrhea or asthma or children with dehydration, cancer patients, patients with kidney failure who need dialysis, pregnant women and other cases are coming to our hospital because they have no other possibility to go to other hospitals. The other hospitals are surrounded by the Israeli tankers, like the biggest hospital in Gaza, Shifa Hospital, and Nasser Pediatric Hospital. Some of the NGO hospitals are closed because of the shortage in fuel and equipment. Since yesterday, we received more than 300 to 400 injured people and tens of other people who had other health problems. We had to do some surgical interventions in the corridors and on the courtyard because of the shortage of anesthesia drugs. Our biggest problem is the shortage in manpower because we are a small hospital. We are not prepared to receive such like these numbers of patients at one time. Many volunteers came to help us, but we need specialized doctors in different specialties, in general surgery, in neurosurgery, chest surgery, vascular surgery, and gynecology, in pediatricians. Unfortunately, we couldn't help many of these patients. Some of them died because we couldn't do anything for them.
That was Dr. Fadel Naeem speaking Sunday from Al Ahli Al Arabi Hospital in Gaza City. To talk more about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, we're joined by Dr. Tanya Hajj-Hassan. She's a pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid organization Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, or Doctors Without Borders. She's in regular contact with health professionals in Gaza and previously worked as a medical trainer in Gaza and the West Bank. She's the co-founder of the social media account Gaza Medic Voices, which shares firsthand accounts from healthcare professionals in Gaza. On Saturday, she took part in a vigil outside British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's office in London. She broke down while reading an urgent message from the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, Dr. Nidal Hadrous.
We, as medical staff, want to leave, but we cannot. We might not survive until the morning.
Dr. Hajj-Hassan breaks down as she tries to read a statement from the doctor in Gaza. She sits down, she covers her eyes. Her colleagues also in blue hospital gear put their arms on her.
We might not survive till the morning. We don't want to be killed here. Just only because we remain committed to our patients and our medical profession. I am calling for help urgently. Please do whatever you can through your government or the ICRC, the Red Cross, to arrange a safe corridor for the medical staff. Please treat this as top urgent. This is the director of the major trauma hospital in Gaza. I'm going to leave you with one more message. To bomb a hospital means to terrify sleeping patients, to break windows over their heads, to make the walls tip onto their bodies, to rip out ventilators and burn oxygen tanks, to ruin equipment that can help human millions of times.
That was Dr. Tanya Hajj-Hassan, pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid group Doctors Without Borders, reading an urgent message from the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, Dr. Nidal Hadrous. Dr. Hashasan, thank you so much for joining us. You must be, to say the least, beyond exhausted. You were reading that statement in London. I last saw you in Jordan, and now you're in Toronto, Canada. Can you talk about the latest? That was Saturday. This is now 2 days later.
Yeah. Just to be clear, you know, this was a vigil with multiple healthcare providers present who have been working in the Gaza Strip for over a decade. And we're all in tears. I mean, every day we feel like we've reached the worst. And I'm going to quote one of my colleagues in Gaza, a young female surgeon, who said, every day we think that we've reached the worst thing that could ever happen, and it's impossible that the world will be silent to it, and it will definitely get better, and we finally reach the end. And then the next day it proves that there's something even worse. And I share that sentiment. We have descended into a very dark era for humanity. Let me just paint a picture for you of the conditions as far as I know them right now at El Shifa Hospital. I'd been receiving updates up until about an hour and a half ago. It's very difficult to receive updates. As you know, communication has been cut off, so they're intermittent. There's certain individuals who have intermittent connection. El Shifa Hospital is the largest trauma hospital in Gaza. It is under complete siege. It has been come under a direct attack by Israeli forces for over a week now. The medical staff, including Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF staff, are physically in the hospital at the moment. There are patients there in critical condition, hundreds of patients, and there are thousands of internally displaced individuals who are still inside that hospital, completely under siege, surrounded by Israeli tanks. They have no access to food. They're surviving on minimal dates and biscuits that are left in the hospital. They have no access to water. They describe being very thirsty. And as you know, they have no access to electricity. After the fuel supply was cut off, the electricity supply was cut off, and more recently, the solar panels were bombed. They describe over 100 bodies lying on the ground, decomposing, dead bodies that they cannot bury. This is after having to dig mass graves in the garden of the hospital. The morgues cannot be cooled to preserve the bodies. As you know, there's no electricity. So they're decomposing. The intensive care unit was targeted twice in the last 24 hours. There are 28 patients there. Two of them have passed away over the course of the evening. These are the adult patients. They have no access to oxygen. Dialysis patients who require electricity to run the dialysis machines because they have kidney failure do not have access to those dialysis machines. I can describe to you in detail what death will look like for these patients. Toxins will develop in their bloodstream. They will become overloaded with fluid because they cannot pee it out. They cannot pee the toxins out either. They will feel very unwell. They will probably get very confused. They'll have difficulty breathing, and eventually they'll die. This is a slow, horrible, painful death, preventable, painful death, like all the deaths in Gaza. Anyone who moved inside the hospital is getting directly killed. Two nurses were killed by snipers in the last 24 hours. Anyone who tries to leave the hospital is targeted. You mentioned the 38 premature newborns, three of whom who've died are currently outside of their incubators at risk of hypothermia without access to oxygen, and I'm not sure how they're going to provide them with all the things they need, including food. This is an entire hospital that's completely cut off, and we've had very little to no news from the other hospitals in the north of Gaza. Last we heard, they're completely surrounded, like El Shifa Hospital. And, you know, we're in a situation where there has been a systematic attempt to destroy civilian Palestinian livelihood and existence in all of Gaza, not just the north. 30% of the killed have been in the south of Gaza, which is supposed to be the safe zone. Humanitarian corridors, or so-called humanitarian corridors, are called the corridor of death by Gazans because they get directly targeted as they're trying to flee on these corridors. You know, Doctors Without Borders, and I mentioned, we're really struggling to contact a lot of the staff. One of my colleagues who I know at El Shifa said, we are sure we are alone now. No one hears us. We are alone. MSF was established, one of the main principles of MSF's establishment by journalists and doctors decades ago, was to provide testimony, this concept of témoignage, which means bearing witness, to provide testimony, to bear witness on these sorts of atrocities that we don't, that are not exposed, and to relieve the suffering of those who experience them. And we're in a situation where we can't do either of those things. One of our MSF staff who is staying in Gaza City, but not physically in the hospital at the moment, said there are dead people on the streets. I'm going to read his quote. There are dead people on the streets. We see people being shot at. We can see injured people. We can hear them crying for help. But we cannot do anything. It is too dangerous to go outside. Ambulances cannot reach the wounded. You mentioned Dr. Hammam Alul earlier, who was on your program a couple days ago, describing how he had refused to leave the hospital and desert his patients. I knew Dr. Hammam. He was a beacon of light. He's a gift to the world of medicine and his patients. He was a brilliant nephrologist, was one of the most highly trained doctors in Gaza. He was transforming the care of patients with chronic renal disease, the same patients that I told you are now subject to a slow and horrifying death. He spent a decade learning how to serve his people. He also has a very young family. He was killed dead in his wife's home along with his father.
His father, his father-in-law, and his brother-in-law.
His young children and the rest are under the rubble at the moment, and they've been calling out to the Red Cross to try and help evacuate, and the Red Cross cannot reach them for all the reasons that I mentioned. You know, I can't believe that I'm having to say this, but healthcare providers, healthcare facilities, civilians have to be protected. He mentioned in his interview to you that...
We're having a little trouble with Dr. Hashassin's Skype. We're going to play that interview. Dr. Haj Hassan, can you hear me?
Well, I can.
You're breaking up a bit. I wanted to bring in another doctor into this conversation as you talk about the doctor whose interview we are going to play in just a minute. Dr. Ben Thompson was also a friend and a colleague of Dr. Hammam Alo. He's a nephrologist in Toronto, where you are now, too. Dr. Ben Thompson, can you also tell us about Dr. Hammam Alo? We're going to play the full interview in just a moment that we did with him just 2 weeks ago.
Thank you, Ms. Goodman. I mean, Dr. Hammam Alo, as my colleague from Médecins Sans Frontières said, was an incredible human being, a committed physician, wonderful father. When I was at his home in September in Gaza City, I was joking with him because I said, "You're such an optimist." You know, he was absolutely convinced. He insisted that if the world knew what was happening in Gaza, that it would intervene and that it would end the suffering for people in Gaza. Like so many doctors in Gaza over the last month, faced with horrible circumstances, he remained committed to his patients. He cared for them despite everything that he faced. The very first interview he did, as he was speaking truth to the world about the horrors that he was experiencing in Gaza, his own home was bombed. Windows, the front door of his house blew off. He went to check on his children. He went to check on his father that lived with him. He put them in a room, and then he came back and finished the interview. And the very next day, he went to work. This was his level of commitment. I'm convinced that if he was here sitting and he was here talking to you, he would have been very clear what he wanted. You know, he was an optimist, yes, and he had good days and bad days over the last month. When we spoke every day, he would talk about how he was committed to developing education programs for today's doctors and the doctors of tomorrow in Gaza. But he also had very difficult days, faced with the very difficult circumstances that he faced every day, seeing his colleagues being killed, working in hospitals with no water, no food, no electricity, knowing that his patients who required dialysis treatments three times a week to survive, knowing that they'd be dead within a week without electricity, all 1,000 of them throughout Gaza would be dead, knowing that, he still went to work. And those good days where he talked to me about education, he also had bad days. And on those bad days, he would tell me, he was speaking of the horrors that he was seeing. He was experiencing war crimes. He was witnessing them. He would tell me he was experiencing a genocide of his own people. It was horrible. You know, I think at this point, politicians are embarrassing themselves by their inaction. He would have been very clear. He would have wanted, there's things that he would have wanted that I can talk to you about. But, you know, I think we need to remember Dr. Hammam, like many physicians in Gaza, was incredibly committed to his patients.
How did he die, Dr. Thompson? How did he die?
He was hit in an airstrike. He was at his wife's home. He was with his father-in-law and his brother-in-law. His wife and two children, who are 4 and 5 years old, were at his own home, so they survived. But while he was at his wife's home, an Israeli airstrike on his home killed all of them in the home.
So, Dr. Thompson, if you can tell me about your own situation in Toronto, I mean, to say the least, that's very different from Gaza. But you were suspended for a month after you and the hospital were threatened over your comments that you tweeted on X. Can you talk about this?
I think, like many people around the world, I have experienced bullying, harassment, and other negative consequences to speaking out for Palestine. In my situation, I had death threats. I was suspended from the hospital. I had a difficult month, but the reality is my worst day over the last month is nothing compared to, you know, the best day of anyone in the last month in Gaza is still worse than my worst day. And the reality is people like Dr. Hammam would want us to think about, you know, what do we need right now? Yes, I suffered death threats, but the reality is Dr. Hammam was killed. And a couple hundred other healthcare professionals in Gaza have been killed. And it behooves us right now to think, what do we have to do? We must have an immediate ceasefire. We must have rapid and unimpeded access to humanitarian aid. And, you know, speaking with Dr. Hammam at his house in September, he talked about the fact he wanted his children to be able to see a day when they had a free, just, durable, free life in Palestine without occupation. We spoke of this often, and I think it behooves us now as an international community. Yes, many of us have been threatened. The reality is much, much worse for our colleagues in Gaza. The reality is we absolutely need to have a ceasefire, humanitarian aid, and there must be a durable, peaceful, just solution for a free Palestine.
I want to bring Dr. Tania Hassan back into the conversation. We're having a little trouble with your Skype, and ask you to respond to what Israel's saying, that they are attacking the hospital because Hamas has used it as underneath it, at least, or all around it. It is not exactly clear as command and control.
You know, I get I get asked this question all the time. I got asked this question in 2014. The same accusations were made in 2008, 2009, 2014, 2021. These aren't new accusations. It's also not new that those accusations have not been substantiated. I have worked in these hospitals. I can tell you what they are with certainty. They are healthcare facilities caring for patients with limited resources as a consequence of a 16-year siege, and with healthcare professionals who are the most dedicated doctors, nurses, paramedics, pharmacists that I have met in my entire life. And Dr. Hammam Alul is the perfect example of that, as are Dr. Maisara and every single doctor who has been killed, and nurse and paramedic and microbiologist. I mean, over 200 healthcare providers have been killed to date, and they have been screaming for international protection. So I can tell you that they are functioning health facilities caring for patients, and regardless of whether accusations of military activity around those hospitals are substantiated, it is an international, it would be considered a war crime to target them if they are functioning as a healthcare facility, and they are. That I am confident of. I am also confident that I have never personally seen any evidence of military activity in and around these hospitals. And that is the most that I can say to this. And I think that the important thing to remember is we keep getting sucked into these arguments where we're justifying these preposterous justifications for the violation of international law. And instead of constantly trying to defend something that's completely, to defend against something that's completely preposterous, I think we need to refocus on what is clear. What is clear is over 11,000 Gazans have been killed to date. Almost 200 Palestinians in the West Bank have been killed. Healthcare facilities are directly targeted with intent. Ambulances are directly targeted with intent. The entire infrastructure of a civilian population, everything that is needed, that is indispensable to their survival, from food to water to medical facilities to their shelter, everything has been targeted, intentionally targeted and destroyed. That is what we should be focusing on. There are also, you know, almost 5,000 children who have been killed that we know of, but we don't have statistics from the last 48 hours because they have completely destroyed the ability to even expose these atrocities. And I, you know, the last message that Dr. Hammam Alul had sent just a few hours before he was killed to one of my colleagues, he said, your shouting means a lot to us. Please keep it up. And I hope what Dr. Ben Thompson, what myself, what every humanitarian doctor or provider or human out there who is screaming about these atrocities, we paint this horrific picture, and I hope it inspires your viewers, the politicians everywhere, to get up and respond to this avalanche of suffering with an avalanche of solidarity and action, because this is not a world that I want to live in. This is not a world that my colleagues want to live in, and this is not a world that we want to raise the next generation of children in. We have museums all around the world that remind us that this is not what we want for humanity, and this is our opportunity to assert that.
Dr. Hash Hassan, there is a new acronym that was coined in Gaza over the last few weeks, WCNSF. Wounded child, no surviving family. Can you explain?
Yeah, I mean, over 1,000 families have been killed. They've had at least two members of their families killed in the last month. Many families are completely wiped out because these are I don't know much about weapons, but I can tell you they are very violent weapons that wipe out entire multi-story residential buildings where families are sheltering in seconds. And you have had so many families wiped off of the civil registry. Sometimes a child survives, and not infrequently one person in the family survives. And so it was happening so frequently that they had to coin a term for it, and sometimes even write it on the bodies of the patient. Sometimes they even just write the words unknown, because it's a child with no surviving family to even identify the child. And, you know, it's not just WCNSF. That is the acronym that has been coined by the Gazan medics. But there's also WMNSF, Wounded Mother, No Surviving Family, WFNSF, Wounded Father, No Surviving Family. These aren't acronyms that are used, but they are realities on the ground.
Dr. Tanya Hash Hassan, I'm going to cut you off, but only so that we can hear this last interview that we did. the last interview with Hamoum Alo. I want to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Tania Haj Hassan, pediatric intensive care physician with Doctors Without Borders. And I want to thank Dr. Ben Thompson, a friend and colleague of Dr. Hamoum Alo, who, again, was killed this weekend in an airstrike. The nephrologist in Toronto, Dr. Ben Thompson, traveled to Gaza twice a year since 2013. His charity is called Keys of Health. We're going to break and then come back to hear Dr. Hamoum Alo's last words. Stay with us. Memory of a Palestinian Wound by Amal Mirkus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed in Gaza since October 7th. Over the weekend, Democracy Now! Learned that Dr. Hamoum Alo was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his family home, killing him, his father, his brother-in-law, and his father-in-law. Dr. Alo was a kidney specialist, a nephrologist who worked at Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza. He was 36 years old. He leaves behind his wife and two children, a 4- and a 5-year-old. Dr. Hamoum Alo spoke to Democracy Now! On October 31st in one of his last interviews. Dr. Hamoum Alo, you've said every day, I see a fear in their eyes that I can't do much about. It's very painful. If you have kids, you know how horrible it is not to be able to comfort them, to ensure they're all right, to make them hope for anything beyond living one more day. If you can talk about that in the hospital, which, as you said, is not just a hospital for sick people. Thousands are taking refuge at Al-Shifa and Al-Quds and the other hospitals. And also, we're talking to you as you just left Al-Shifa. How do you comfort your family? What's happening to your family as you're at the hospital?
I tell them at least we still have a house with a door to close. But many thousands refugees, people like us who used to live in dignity, have no longer houses and no doors to close to protect them. They are surrounded by wastewater, by garbage. They don't have adequate continuous supply of clean water to drink. Many of them have a lot of missing members of their families. They don't know if they are alive or not. I tell them at least we still have a house to live in, but they don't have. And surprisingly, my 4- and 5-year-old kids, they accept this as a comfort, as a better situation compared to those refugees living. They are living actually in hospitals, but it's not like they are living inside the hospital departments. Many of them do not have enough space to go into hospital hallways, so they are living around the buildings and in the garden. So yeah, surprisingly, my very young kids accept this.
The Israeli military has dropped thousands of pamphlets warning people where you are in northern Gaza to leave. Why don't you go with your family south?
And if I go, who treats my patients? They are not animals. They have the right to receive proper health care.
Doctor,
we can just leave.
The World Health Organization talked about this issue of telling doctors to leave their patients, choosing your own lives over your patients. Can you talk about that choice, since so many patients can't leave, for example, babies in incubators?
you think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life and not my patients? I'm asking you, ma'am. Do you think this is the reason why I went to med school? To think only about my life? This is not the reason why I became a doctor.
Can you talk about what's happening to the hospitals? Just in our headlines today, we talked about, and in the last few days, the attack on the Indonesia hospital. The Turkish hospital is the only cancer hospital. Can you talk about the significance of these places, both as a sanctuary, thousands of people taking refuge, and for patients?
Indonesian hospital is providing health care for over 400,000 citizens in the Gaza Strip. And this part of the Gaza Strip is being split from the rest of the Gaza Strip. If this hospital stops providing care, so we are exposing many thousand Palestinian souls to the dangers of disease and death. Turkish hospital, with its very modest capabilities even before war, was the only hospital providing care and medications for cancer patients from around the Gaza Strip. It was airstruck yesterday. I don't know how many patients and healthcare professionals were wounded. And many patients are dying now because they are not safe with their families to go to receive care and to continue their chemotherapy. The Ministry of Health has declared 2 hours ago also that the electricity would be cut off from Ashifa Hospital, the largest hospital representing 40% of the healthcare power in the Gaza Strip, and providing services for many machine-dependent patients, like the ventilated patients and the hemodialysis patients. So if electricity is cut out from this in this hospital, so we are directly deciding those patients are going to necessarily die. Ventilated patients will die in minutes. Dialysis patients will die in hours to days from stopping their hemodialysis. Many patients are now being treated with the modest supplies we have. Many diabetic patients are now being admitted to the hospital because of their insulin is not being kept in the refrigerator, so it's not working. We are out. We ran out of many medications, like antifungal medications. We have a patient who died earlier this week with mucormycosis. This is an invasive, ugly type of fungal infection that killed her because we had no amphotericin to offer her. So my very simple answer to your question is that this thing is coming to so many people in the Gaza Strip in hours to days. If this continues the same way it's going on.
Dr. Allo, the Middle East Eye reports on a baby who died, says his death certificate has been issued before his birth certificate. A one-day-old baby has been killed by Israeli bombing in Gaza. Israel, the military, the government, says that Al-Shifa, your hospital, is Hamas, the site of Hamas command and control. Can you respond to that, Dr. Allo?
I've been working in this hospital for over 2 years, and I never saw this. So I'm no lawyer, I'm no attorney, but this is how I'm simply replying. I never saw this for over 2 years. If this is true, I would see at least a clue.
I want to ask you about the shipments of aid coming in. Normally, in normal times, if there's ever a normal time in Gaza, over 400 trucks a day. We're talking about a trickle of trucks now, maybe a dozen, maybe eight in a day. Have you ever seen this aid arriving at the hospital? And can you talk about what you need right now?
Well, the that number you just mentioned that was allowed into Gaza Strip is actually what you were referring to. It is nothing compared to what we need, nothing compared to the shortage in supplies, machines, and medications we are need for. The only thing I came just as I was leaving the hospital today was cartoons of IV fluid bottles. This is the only thing I saw. And I don't really know if this came through the aid trucks in the few couple of days, or that was from the stores of the Ministry of Health. In addition, I happened to ask about in the hospital administration, and what they mentioned that was all about the gloves and gauze. And this is not what we are actually only in need for. This is what maybe the least we care for, the least we are in need for. So this is, again, nothing compared to what we are in need for in terms of supplies and medications.
Finally, Dr. Hammam Alo, your message at this point to the United States, where we're based, and to the world?
Actually, the message hasn't changed since the beginning of this war. First, we need this war to end because we are really humans. We are no animals. We have the right to live freely. Second, if you want your citizens to live under these circumstances, what would you do for them? This is what we exactly would like you to do for us as a superpower country, as the United States, because you are really as human as your U.S. citizens are. We were expecting more earlier, solutions for that humanitarian and healthcare catastrophes and the crises. But what we are seeing mainly through trucks allowed into Gaza is nothing compared to us. So we are being exterminated. We are being massively eradicated. And you pretend to care for humanitarian and human rights, which is not what we are living now. To prove us wrong, please do something. Thank you.
Dr. Hammam Alo, speaking to us from Gaza City, where he works at the largest hospital, Al-Shifa Hospital. Please be safe.
I hope I will be. Let's hope both together I will be. Thank you.
Dr. Hammam Alo was speaking from Gaza on Democracy Now! On October 31st in one of his last interviews. He was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his wife's home, killing him, his father-in-law, and his brother-in-law. Dr. Alo is a kidney specialist who worked at Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza City. He was 36 years old. He leaves behind a wife and two children, a 4- and a 5-year-old. Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed in Gaza since October 7th. And that does it for our show. To see all our interviews with doctors, with residents, with Israeli historians and scholars and peace activists, with Palestinian and Israeli peace activists and academics, human rights lawyers. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we speak with two attorneys from the Center for Constitutional Rights who have completed a legal analysis demonstrating U.S. complicity in the unfolding genocide in Palestine.
We'll be speaking with Asta Sharma Pakarel and Sadaf Dust on what they've accomplished, and we can learn about how we can use this.
We'll also speak with the artist Bob Senandella about his lawsuit against major New York museums.
It was an antitrust lawsuit because the art market is fixed, according to Senandella. This is an amazing story.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm Maria Hall, Los Angeles civil rights lawyer. We're now in week 4 of Israel's massive military assault against the people of Gaza and the West Bank, which began as a response to Hamas's brutal attacks that occurred on October 7th. Israel contends the military bombardments are justified as self-defense. But others, such as Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, insist that although the attacks by Hamas on October 7th were tragic and appalling, Israel's quote-unquote collective punishment of civilians cannot be justified under humanitarian laws. Even worse, Defense for Children International Palestine reported that 40% of the Palestinians killed in Gaza have been children. And as of October 30th, Israeli forces have killed more than 3,400 children and more than 1,000 are still missing. And these numbers are going up. According to the global charity Save the Children, in the past 3 weeks, more children have been killed in Gaza than in all of the world's conflicts combined in each of the past 3 years. On October 18th, 2023, the Center for Constitutional Rights, also known as CCR, published an emergency legal briefing called Israel's Unfolding Crime of Genocide of the Palestinian People and U.S. Failure to Prevent and Complicity in Genocide. The 44-page document provides a sobering legal and historical analysis of the current situation in Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza. We are so grateful to have with us two members of CCR's legal team working on the legal analysis of genocide. First, we have staff attorney Asta Sharma Pokharel, who specializes in international human rights and in challenging racial and environmental injustice. ASTHA has also represented individuals targeted for their Palestine solidarity advocacy. We also have Sadaf Doost, an attorney and Bertha Justice Fellow at CCR. Sadaf focuses on human rights in the context of Afghanistan and Palestine and challenges unlawful detentions at Guantanamo Bay and environmental racism in Cancer Alley. A warm welcome to you both.
Thanks so much for having us. It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Sure. I'd like to start off with a question for Sadaf. During times of grave human rights and humanitarian violations, what does an emergency brief such as this aim to accomplish?
So there are two aims that I'll highlight. The first is to create a permanent public record of Israel's war crimes and crimes against humanity, and doing this